Welcome to This Week in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. Today, Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com runs down the major markets. Tesla was the big surprise from the past month, and gasoline may be about to do its seasonal charge. Ross checks out gold, crude, and the U.S. and Canadian dollars. John Rubino, author of several books on the economy, including The Money Bubble, warns the announced U.S. GDP growth is illusional. He says the official inflation rate is much higher than what the government wants you to believe. He tells us why gold and silver are a good safety net. Canada's real estate agent to the stars, Alan Mark Angel, is here to discuss high-end real estate in Vancouver. He tells us why it's so important at any level to have an experienced real estate agent if you want your property to move. We'll talk to Ross Clark right after this.
Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
Welcome to This Week in Money, the source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com, where you'll find insightful market commentary and timely technical analysis. You can find him on Twitter at chartsbyross. Welcome back to the show.
Always a pleasure, Jim.
The stock markets, how do they behave this week?
We finally got a little bit of direction going on here. The S&P, the Dow, the NASDAQ, all managing to push higher during the week, and they are in the verge of taking out that December high. So while this has been an inside month in most of those indices, we are seeing enough price action here that, it's got a chance of maybe decently into February.
The Bank of Canada said it's going to pause on raising interest rates for a while. Did that have any impact?
Do you think Canada is a leader in this kind of thing and everybody listens? No. I think that, it's nice that they're going to have a pause in that the economic numbers are going to justify them slowing down here. And, realistically, it takes time for all of this stuff to feed through into the economy. And, I prefer to try and not justify what any of the bank members are saying, or what politicians are saying, or what the economists are saying. I like to look at the chicken scratches on the charts and see what is jumping out at me. And typically, looking at markets which spend a lot of time consolidating and then a bit of time trending, unless it's a currency, and currencies tend to trend for long periods, and so do the bond markets, but in most cases, stocks and stock indices tend to spend a fair amount of time during these consolidation phases. And once they finally do start to come out of them, you want to make sure that you ride the trend. And in this case, those seem to be showing enough life here to get things going. When we take a look at some of the worst stocks and the ones that had the big tax selling at the end of the year, the one that really jumped out for us was Tesla. We had our capitulation signals kicked in, and Tesla had buy signals back on the 27th of December. We were as oversold as we had seen it four other times in the history of the stock, and the probability of a reversal and a good-sized move appeared pretty much to be in the cards. And as of this week, that position is up 65%. From that December 27th signal for us when we got the downside capitulation. So the key is to, in many cases, just to be looking for those extremes and then a bit of stability and go with the developing trend as it works itself along.
What's happening with crude?
Poor end of the week. Still stuck in a trading range. We've got at this point we're back under $80, 79.5. It's still got that good resistance in the mid-80s. Let's put it that way. There's a good resistance line that comes in at about 85, coming down from the summer highs. Consolidation, we're in the season where we should have a little bit of an upside bias. We take a look at other items in the complex here. Look at natural gas. Gas down at 287. This was at $10 back in the summer. And this thing is in a bit of a tailwind right now, or just a downward spiral. And this is something we clearly will be keeping in our eyes on, because if we get a major extreme in that, I don't care whether it's a bear market or not, there should be a really nice trade coming off the bottom. And the other one we are looking at here is the gasoline. The UGA is the ETF on that one. And it's had a decent start to its seasonal run. It got up around 64, back at 62 right now. And maybe a mild correction back to 60 becomes a buying opportunity. And the seasonal play would be, strength into the spring. So that's one to keep an eye on.
What's happening with the U.S. and Canadian dollars?
U.S. dollar is just stuck in this ever-tightening trade range. We've got 101.97 tonight on the close, and I don't think it's been more than 40 points either side of that all week long. So when you grind down like this, you typically would have the first move out of the consolidation is usually a false move. So we'll keep an eye on this, but I think you've really got to see it get through 104 to say that the trend has changed to the upside. And on the downside, really, it's sitting still on top of those 2017 through 2020 highs, that's reasonable support. Canadian dollar got a bit of a lift here, that was after the Bank of Canada came along, and saying, that they were at this point only doing the quarter point. I think the market, reads into that maybe the economy is improving enough that they don't have to be as concerned on the interest rate side. Anyway, we're 75 and change tonight as far as the currency is concerned, and that's starting to break out through resistance lines. It's being helped along by the agricultural commodities, not by oil, but at least by the ag ones. And I don't think there's anything exciting to be had in the Canadian dollar, but at this point, support back at about 74, resistance up at 76.
Anything happening with gold?
Yes, we've had just a great seasonal run. Now, usually that's from the middle of December and carries you through February. In this case, both gold and silver bottomed out in October and then started to come to life right at the beginning of November. So that's about 6 weeks early for the seasonal. And the run has been pretty good as far as gold is concerned. Now, silver topped out a month ago, and it's just been consolidating. The gold managed to put on another $100 after silver peaked out. We've got some good overbought readings, and we're starting to see now divergences as far as the money flow oscillators are concerned, such as the demand index. As gold made marginally higher highs in the last 10 days, the money flow indices have failed to match those highs. So there's a pretty good chance that we're setting up for a correction. We've got some short-term moving averages that we're monitoring that we'll be using as a catalyst to say that things have rolled over. Talking about, as we did with Tesla, the big oversold reading there, back in the summer, We had Newmont, which is our sort of poster child as far as the big cap names is concerned in the gold stocks. That one was down to most oversold levels. With I think it was the seventh time in since 1970 we had had a such an oversold reading. And you typically would get a bounce and then a retest of the low, which would test the Bollinger Band. The guidelines we had just worked out really, really nicely for that, and had a good base as far as Newmont and Kinross and some of these others were concerned. And here they are. They're up anywhere from 30 to 70% since basing out. So once again, the key is to look for extremes, then some stability, and then go with the new emerging trend. So at this point, the that Newmont trade has been a nice one, but I think it's time for people to be lightening up on the precious metals.
Ross, thank you so much for the update.
A pleasure, Jim.
My guest has been Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com. Find him on Twitter at ChartsByRoss. Coming up, John Rubino, next on This Week in Money.
Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. This Week in Money is archived online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com.
My guest is John Rubino, author of several books on the economy, including The Money Bubble. He founded the website DollarCollapse.com. He's speaking to us from Port Angeles, Washington. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jim.
John, is a recession just around the corner, or are we already in one?
Well, it's one or the other for the U.S., at least. There are a huge number of negative stats that have come out lately that imply the economy is slowing down. Consumer credit is at record highs, and the savings rate is at a record low, and the money supply is shrinking, and house prices are going down, and home sales are grinding to a halt is too strong a term, but they're really, really slowing down, and car sales and car prices are down. It goes on and on. So we're definitely tipping over into a recession if we're not already in one. Now, one thing pointing in the other direction was a pretty good GDP report that just came out today. But that, when you look at it, was actually due to the fact that inventories went up. In other words, businesses bought a bunch of stuff that they're going to sell in the next quarter, and they'll run their inventories back down. So that's kind of a self-correcting thing. So strength because of inventories in the previous quarter will give us weakness because of a drawdown in inventories in the current quarter. So that doesn't really mean anything at all to the recession scenario. So yeah, I think we get a recession pretty soon. And the question is, how deep is it going to be? And that remains to be seen. And it depends to a big extent on what central banks do. You know, if they keep raising interest rates, then they can make it much, much worse. And if not, not.
Well, we already have record high inflation. Well, maybe not record high, but certainly we haven't seen anything like this for 40 years or so, with high interest rates as well. Do they have to keep hiking rates? Normally, you know, they would see rate hikes every maybe 5 months or 6 months, like just one hike, to see how that affected inflation. Why do they do it all at once, everywhere, all at once?
Well, this freaked all the central banks of the world out. You know, we had literally 10% inflation, in honest terms in the U.S. last year. The official rate was something like 8.9% or something. And that's a crisis. That is something that cannot be allowed to continue. So the central banks of the world, you know, led by the Fed, all feel like they have to raise interest rates to the point where they just snuff this inflation out. And they can totally do it. I mean, they already are doing it. A lot of industrial commodity prices are down. House prices are down. Lumber has crashed. Car prices are falling. So, and then the most recent reading for the producer price index was negative. So we are already squeezing inflation out of the system. And the thing that they're considering now is that enough? Is commodity inflation going away enough to declare victory and quit? Or do you need services prices to start falling too? And you know, they're not falling yet, but I think they will be. They'll follow everything else down. So the central banks of the world feel like they need to raise interest rates some more. Although I just saw that Canada said they were done, right? They raised interest rates and said, that's it, no more. But most of the other central banks will continue to tighten for a while. And I think tightening into a recession is a very risky thing to do, because there are so many leveraged entities out there. Basically, we're running a global Ponzi scheme, you know, and if you cut the funds off, new funds from a Ponzi scheme, it collapses because the money is not there. And that's basically the situation for a huge part of the global economy. So central banks are playing with fire when they raise interest rates beyond a certain point. But of course, if they don't, then they risk inflation like we had last year becoming embedded and everybody just freaking out and you know, front running inflation and making it a self-fulfilling prophecy. So we're close to the death spiral scenario where no matter what we do, everything blows up in the not too distant future. And I think it's completely feasible that with hindsight, you know, 5 years from now, we'll look back and say, yeah, you know, we entered the death spiral in 2023. So I think it's completely feasible that we're there now.
Gold and silver are having nice runs. Will that continue in a recession?
That's a good question. Because in the past couple of stock market mini collapses and tips into recession that we've had, that was 2008 and 2020, stocks tanked and gold and silver and the related mining stocks all got pulled down in the overall stock market vortex. And that could easily happen again here. You know, we could absolutely have a big drop in corporate profits leading to a big drop in stock prices from here, which pulls down pretty much everything because you've got the reverse wealth effect and everybody's worried about what a falling stock market will do to the banks like Deutsche Bank and Credit Suisse. Will they blow up? You know, we'll have a lot of fear generated by another 20% drop in stocks. And that could easily pull gold and silver down. So on the one hand, you know that Fed capitulation is out there somewhere. The central banks have to stop tightening and start easing again, which will be just rocket fuel for precious metals. But the thing that makes the central banks stop tightening and start easing again could have to be a crisis. So there may be this thing out there that we have to kind of get through in precious metals. And but the nice thing about that is that if we have some dry powder when that happens, we'll be able to buy some mining stocks and some silver coins and things like that at really low prices and then watch everything go up dramatically from there once all that new central bank funny money hits the system. So if the recent past is prologue, it's possible we got one more serious correction in precious metals and then to the moon. So at the end of the to the moon part of this, we won't care where we bought gold and silver now, but I think in the moment we'll be much happier if we buy it at the bottom low before it takes off again. So I would say have some cash on hand and be ready if everything falls to pick up the stuff that will likely go back up the most dramatically, which would be precious metals and the related mining stocks.
The Saudis are now open to taking other currencies in payment for their oil. Is this the end of the U.S. petrodollar?
We're kind of getting there. It might be the end of the dollar as the only currency with which countries can buy oil. And that's already happening. You've got deals between Russia and China where they're working with each other's currencies, and India is doing the same thing. And now if Saudi Arabia is, they're kind of joining the BRICS coalition, which is really amazing. But Brazil, India, China, and Oh, and Russia. So those countries are forming a separate currency block already, and they're going to create some kind of a currency that competes on some level with the dollar. That's their plan. And if Saudi Arabia joins that, then you've got some really massive amounts of commodities backing up whatever currency they decide to create, and it's a very real thing. It's not, you know, an immediate competitor for the dollar, because those guys all together do not have capital markets that are deep enough and liquid enough to support a global reserve currency. It's just, they're not there yet. And the U.S., despite what we're doing to the dollar, we still have these capital markets that make it possible for our currency to function as a global reserve currency. So the dollar is not going anywhere in terms of, or it is going to diminish somewhat, but it's not going away in terms of global trade. But I think longer term, the value of the dollar is going to continue to fall, even though we might have a slowdown in the rate of descent this year. And at some point, and it doesn't have to be a really distant point if we have a few more years like last year, the dollar stops being what anybody would consider a strong currency. We still might use it for trade, but we will not want to use it as a savings vehicle. So that's probably coming. And that's a complicated answer to a complicated situation. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the monetary sphere that make analysis in the short run pretty tricky. But I think in the long run, it's a very safe bet that all of these big fiat currencies are headed for history's trash heap. We cannot have the concept of a fiat currency in place for much longer, because it leads to so much new debt being taken on and so much bad behavior on the part of governments and central banks that we destroy ourselves. And we're headed for that in a financial sense right now. So you and I, over the next 5 years, will probably talk about this every couple of weeks, and we'll cover the collapse of the global fiat currency concept. You know, it just won't be a thing that anybody respects anymore in the not too distant future.
What replaces paper money?
Well, something that's backed by something. In other words, if we went back to a gold standard, and each country defines its currency in terms of gold, and can only, and say has to back 40% of its circulating currency with gold, that means its money supply can only grow at the rate of its gold reserves. And since the amount of gold in the world is only growing at 1 or 2% a year, we're back to limiting the growth in the global money supply, which is to say we're back with a sound money system. So that's what we have to do. And it might not be gold. It might be some kind of a commodity, a broader commodity basket or something like that. Oil might be in the mix. I don't know. Now, along the way, central banks are going to try to introduce central bank digital currencies.
Yeah.
Which are a very bad thing for human freedom, right? They're just a terrible thing for us to have to live under. But you can have a digital currency that isn't a fiat currency. In other words, they can have a gold-backed dollar and still introduce a digital Fed currency. So those are kind of two separate things that might intertwine at some point. And I think it'll be useful as it progresses for us to kind of tease out the different threads and make sure that we're not blundering into something that we think is good, like a gold-backed Fed coin or something like that, where the central bank has total control over everything you do with your money, and they know where you are at every moment of the day. Okay, that can be a gold-backed currency, but it's still not a good thing. So there's an awful lot for us to keep track of and a lot for us to oppose going forward. And, you know, I kind of feel like I'm old enough that I shouldn't have to fight a civil war. Our kids should do it, but that's a hell of a thing for us to leave for our kids. So I think even baby boomers are going to have to be involved in this, to keeping us from descending into absolute authoritarianism. So far we're losing, but we got to pick up the pace here.
One of the things I thought about digital currency, What happens if there's a power failure or somebody's currency gets hacked, like we've seen with cryptocurrencies?
Yes, that's a very big deal. And there's a lot of ways to lose internet access. You can have an EMP attack. You can have a solar flare. You can have a cyber attack. And a few other things that can all take you offline. And if all you've got is a cryptocurrency of some sort, then you gotta wait for the power to come back on. Talking about the pros and cons of cryptos versus gold and stuff like that, I overuse an example of, you know, what if the power is out and you and I both need to get out of town and there's a car dealership with one car left and I've got a bunch of Krugerrands in my pocket and you've got a hard drive with some cryptocurrency code on there. You know, who's going to get that car? Obviously me with my Krugerrands. And that could be a situation that we have to deal with at some point. So that is definitely one of the downsides of government-run cryptos, because there's no way they can keep them available to us without keeping the grid up 100% of the time, which nobody can do in this world. Nobody can guarantee that because there are too many weapons out there. There are too many contingencies that can knock the power out and take you offline. So, yes, that's a very big deal. Yet another thing we got to think about.
Canada has already experienced something like that. Everybody who was a Rogers Cellular customer, whether it was a business or person, lost their service for 2 or 3 days. No money. No access to banks, can't gas up your car, can't buy groceries, can't take a taxi. We know what it's like to lose it.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, imagine that in the middle of winter when you've got some kind of a family emergency at the same time. It's cold, the power is off, you can't access your bank accounts, cash has been outlawed. That is a dire situation, and it's totally possible, just given our recent experience, right? You can have a power outage in the winter, and you can have not very much cash on hand at that moment, and then what do you do, you know?
You won't have any cash on hand because there isn't any cash.
Yeah, but I mean, we can be in that situation now just by not having enough cash in the house.
Yeah.
But later, if the government outlaws cash, then we're all in that situation. And that's when gold and silver coins become a lifesaver, a literal lifesaver, because there might be something you need that that somebody in your family or you depends on, and you can't pay for it with the internet being down. Well, you can pull out some gold and silver coins, and you can totally pay for it. Because remember, everybody else will be in the same boat. So if you walk into pretty much any place with some silver eagles or some maple leaves or something like that, you will be listened to and accommodated by whoever's trying to sell whatever it is you need to buy. And that's when we will all wish we had more gold and silver coins than we do. It doesn't matter how much we've got, we will wish we had more. And if we don't have any, then we might not be around very long to wish anything.
The politics of vaccines have changed dramatically. What happened, and will the new trend continue?
This is huge in the last few weeks. Basically, at least in the U.S., now it sounds like you guys have the same kind of situation where the government controls your media, and therefore only the main government narrative gets wide coverage. And so far in the U.S., it's, until very recently, it's been, yeah, the vaccines are safe and effective and everybody should get vaccinated. And if you don't get vaccinated, there's something wrong with you. And we just have to decide whether you should just be locked in your house or whether you should go to prison. That's been the government narrative. But people, there are all these videos of people just keeling over out there. And you can't hide all of those things just because CNN isn't running them. Netflix is running them. Twitter is running them. So people are seeing this stuff. And there was just a survey very recently asking people whether they knew anybody who had been killed by a vaccine. And 28% of the people said yes. And it wasn't just Republicans. I think vaccinated Democrats had a higher yes response to that than conservatives and unvaccinated people did. So you got a significant part of the population that's already getting very skeptical. And then we had this football player on national TV in an important NFL game just keel over, which football players never do that. They get hurt and they get knocked out and stuff. But this guy, you know, he took a hit, but he got up, he keeled over, and his heart stopped. And we still haven't actually seen that guy. Nobody really knows what happened to him. And the assumption is because, the assumption on the part of a growing number of people is that because everybody in the NFL is forced to be vaccinated as a precondition for playing in the NFL, that the guy's fully vaxxed. And so it might have been the vaccine that did it. I'm not saying it is. I'm saying that there are questions in people's minds now where there weren't before because of these.
He was at the last Buffalo Bills game.
He was wearing a face mask or a ski mask and a hoodie. Nobody saw his face. That's one of the creepy aspects of this. I mean, it might have been him, but why was his face covered? Why did nobody actually see his face? And again, I'm not saying I know anything or I'm sure anything is right, but I'm saying that weird stuff like that is causing people to question the mainstream narrative. And then just yesterday, Project Veritas, which does undercover videos of people who don't know they're being filmed, got to an executive who said all kinds of things that are not part of the narrative and look really bad for the big pharmaceutical companies and for the government regulators. He said five or six things. You don't even have to take the worst thing, which was that they're considering actively evolving COVID so that they can see what it turns into and have vaccines ready, which is a really bad thing to do. That's weaponizing this disease that's already nasty. Leave that out. He said three or four other things that were so damning that they're having an impact too. So anyhow, it looks like the political tide is shifting against the whole vaccinate everybody in sight and then do it again in 6 months for perpetuity narrative that we had before as the official narrative. So we'll see where it goes. But I think there's a big inflection point that we just hit, and it's going to go in a different direction. We'll see what that direction is.
John, the U.S. bullied Germany into shipping tanks to Ukraine. Are we now actively in World War III?
We are getting really close, Jim. This is terrifying. I'll just say it. The U.S. shouldn't be involved in stuff like that anyhow, in my opinion. We started that war, and we are actively trying to destroy Russia, who is a nuclear power. And before they go down, it's completely feasible that they use nuclear weapons. That we're sending ever-increasing amounts of ever more powerful equipment to Ukraine. Basically, this is a proxy war like we used to fight back in the days of the Soviet Union, where we pick a little country and we send them after somebody else who's a part of our enemy's coalition. And so we fight that war by proxy, by letting other people die for us. And we're doing that with Ukraine. You know, we're going to let 10 million Ukrainians die. We don't care. We want to take Russia off the chessboard geopolitically. And what if U.S. soldiers and Russian soldiers start fighting in Ukraine? Or what if we're delivering those tanks and training these guys in Ukraine how to use them, and Russia takes out that tank battalion or whatever with American trainers there? And so now we're shooting each other. This is too terrible to think about. And there was a story yesterday about Russia sending one of its advanced warships towards the U.S. With hypersonic missiles on it. You know, so this is just spinning completely out of control, and it's our fault. We're going to have to, you know, I can't stress that enough. This is the U.S.'s fault. We could have stop this from ever happening very easily. And instead, we went for it. We got these crazy neocon chicken hawks in charge of U.S. foreign policy right now, and they seem to actually want World War III, or they consider a limited nuclear war to be a small price to pay to turn Russia into a vassal state. And that's just absolutely, absolutely incredibly insane. And we're doing it. So, you know, a shooting war with Russia makes all the other stuff you and I talk about now completely irrelevant, because that is so much of a bigger deal than money supply growth or GDP numbers or anything like that. So you want to see inflation. You want to see a currency crisis. Let's start shooting at Russians and see what happens to the dollar and to the U.S. stock market and to GDP growth. That, I tell you what, if that happens, all you want to own is gold and silver. Just sell everything else you've got, buy precious metals, and hunker down, because it is going to be something that's worse than we can even imagine if we end up in a shooting war with Russia.
John, always fun to chat with you.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. I know that not a lot of this has been fun. Hopefully the world is a less crazy place pretty soon, and we can just talk about financial crises instead of anything more horrible than that. Oh, and Jim, before we go, I've got a thing I'd like to plug. I've got a Substack feed that I started a month ago, and I'm starting to populate it with content, and you can show up, and there's a free subscription option where you get to see most of what's there, and come on, you know, so anybody who wants to come on and take a look, and we can cover this stuff together going forward.
Is there an address for it?
Oh yeah, sorry. It's rubino.substack.com. You know, come in, get a free subscription, and we can communicate that way.
John, once again, great chatting.
Thanks, Jim.
My guest has been John Rubino, author of several books on the economy, including The Money Bubble. He founded the website dollarcollapse.com, and that Substack address?
Rubino.substack.com.
Coming up, Alan Mark Angel, next on This Week in Money.
Recyclical, making lithium-ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Alan Mark Angel. He's one of the top realtors in Canada, I'd say in North America, frankly. He has sold more than 4,000 properties. He's in West Van, British Columbia. The most expensive real estate, I would say, in Canada. Am I correct, Mark?
Yes, you are.
You can find him online at theangelgroup.com, ANGELL group.com. Alan, welcome back to This Week in Money.
Yeah, and just our company site is really called angelhasman.com. .ca, and that will show you the type of product we have. I think our houses start at $25 million have done good, but Angel has been, A-N-G-E-L-L, has been H-A-S-M-A-N .ca. Had a real estate office in West Vancouver since 1975.
Yeah, and you guys are expanding and you're working hard at that?
Well, you know, it's interesting, but my top guy that had me for years, he said he would never leave me, but he's got always, I'm going to retire 2 years. And, you know, you sit back and you own the company. I said, I'd like to do that. So he left me a year ago at Christmas time. And I thought, well, okay. So, and he had five guys that came with him. They all went. So I said, well, I've got to hire guys to replace him. But, you know, you talk to the top guys. Well, I'll go, but I want a year's free or something. So we thought, well, you know, I've always wanted to expand the company. My partner and I talked, and his son is so great at this Instagram, the, you know, social media stuff. And we said, well, let's expand. So now we opened up in White Rock, Abbotsford, Kelowna. We opened up in December. We just found an office in Portland, and we'll probably have one in Langley. We actually flew to the island to talk to some people there, but it got fogged in. We had to fly back. That was in December, so. Well, we're expanding the company, and it's re-energized me. I mean, I love to work, but having the new people in, and the fact that I can still, I just hired two very successful realtors today. And they've both been, the husband and wife been in business 12 years, and I showed them a few things. We've never seen anything like that. The stuff that I do, no other realtor spends 25 hours a week analyzing the market. That's why I do it from Maple Ridge to Squamish. I showed them my charts, and they said, I'm not even a realtor. I didn't know any of that stuff. It's shocking, the stuff that they don't know, because the board's an indication what's going on. But, you know, if you want to become a top realtor, you need to know exactly what is going on. What are the true sales? What's going on? The choice of realtor now is probably more important than it's ever been, because the real estate business right now is in the turmoil. It's insane. Second worst year in history we just had, and I'm not expecting it to change at all.
The new BC property assessments are out. Are people being taxed on historical property values that are now not accurate and still declining?
Well, it's strange because we've gone through in the 2018-19, about 80% of the houses were selling below assessment value. And I never seen that in my career, that all of a sudden it changed and it went about 80% above. Now, I checked the sales for this year in Vancouver, North Vancouver, West Vancouver, and it's 50-50. I was shocked. I think we were two sales apart. So half of them are selling over and half of them are selling under assessed value. So it means that the way the market's going, we're going to be selling more and more under assessment value from now on at all, because the government does this, you know, last year, that, you know, they do this a year ago. The market changes so rapidly. Like, remember the start of last year, the market was strong. And then all of a sudden, depending on the area, our office ended in June. Our West Vancouver market ended in June. Some of them ended in March. So depending on where you lived, that's when the market was over. So you've either had 6 months of a terrible market or some places seven or eight. So it's changing all the time. That's why your realtor, most realtors don't spend the time on that. They have no idea at all. I remember telling the story of one of my top guys. He sent out a flyer last year. He says, we're near record in number of sales. Great sales. But I said, listen, you don't know your staff. We didn't even have the average year of sales, not even average. It was 683 sales we had in 2021, and the average is 737, and the best year is 1,200. So even though he was a great realtor, he didn't have a clue what the market was doing. He's doing well, so he assumes the market's great. So the realtor, choice of realtor, no, I've never seen it more important than it is. No, I just closed the deal in December. I put it on in June, and I said, we better get it on. I tried all 6 months to get it on. I finally got it on, but I said, the market's just in the process of doing the change. And it took me six. I never worked harder on a house in my life. I told him he would sell it for 3.8 to 9, and that the market kept adjusting. Finally, I just sold exactly where I did. So he was lucky he had me to get that price, because right now the market's down about 15%. So really, 150. If your house have a $2 million house, it's a $300,000 drop. $3 million is 450. That's what is going on right now.
This week, the Bank of Canada raised the bank rate by 25 basis points. How long does it take for bank rate increases to affect the price of homes?
Well, it's always, we've gone through 6 or 8 months of that. So I think the people, it's like one thing I've learned in life. I've never been an intelligent person, including myself. When I watch the elections that happen, what's going on in the world, you know, people, they're just trying to stay alive and do as best they can. That they don't spend a lot of time on picking that, well, who's running in this office, and that they just vote. I'm a liberal, I'll vote that way. I'm conservative, or, you know, I'm a Democrat or Republican. That's what they do. This is the same. It affects them, but most people haven't got the time and they don't know. They're just trying to pay their bills. It's already adjusting. It's not going to change because the rates are getting higher and higher, but you know, we go back to the age where they're up to 20%. So it's just, it affects the market in a strong way, but most people aren't aware how strong it's been affected.
We recently chatted with Eric Haddock from InsideTrackTrading.com about the 40-year real estate cycle in the early 80s. Vancouver saw a lengthy real estate crash as interest rates doubled from around 10% to nearly 20%. Now, 40 years later, are we just repeating the same thing over again?
Well, my feeling is it's actually worse because, you know, I was there actually in 1981 or 80. I was for sure became the top leader of Canada. And the rates went from 10 to 20. In fact, I was with a gentleman yesterday that you and I spoke about. He remembers paying 22%. So the rates were twice, from 10 to 20. So they doubled up. You think what's happened here. In the last 5 years, guys have had more mortgages from 1.5% to 2.5%. They're now, you know, getting up 6, sometimes over 6, high 6. That's not double. That's times 3. So, and the houses are so much more expensive now. The mortgages are so much higher. So you're paying 3 times your rate that you were in 1980. It was twice the rate. So I think we're going to be affected more now. I mean, I just had a couple of people I sold at their new rate, high 5. They couldn't qualify. They had to borrow money off the family to get the qualifier for the new mortgage. I think we're going to have a very slow year because of that.
We're hearing that, depending on the area, prices from the real estate peak have already dropped 25 to 40%. Is that accurate?
No, it's not. No, it's not. I do all the, as I said, I do from Maple Ridge in. And I'm telling you, honestly, even though I haven't sold anything in Maple Ridge, I go all the way to Squamish. My best guess is they're down 13 to 15% because, you know, we're selling out. Like, as I said, the one I just sold, I basically got the same value it was worth before the crash. So if your realtor's really good, you can still do well. But no, it's 15%. My guess it'll go to 25, maybe to 30% by the time it ends.
As mortgage rates rise and lending tightens, could we get to a point where cash buyers will control the price of homes?
Well, you know, we don't get a lot of cash buyers, to be honest. I can't remember my last one. Even the Chinese that are, you know, are now here, they like to get a 50% mortgage because they got to get their credit established in Canada. The Iranians that come over. And honestly, I have no idea when my last cash buyer was. We just don't see a lot of them. So I don't think it'll be that. It'll just be the stressful. Some people will have to sell. They're going to change, but most people will just say, they'll say, here's my price. If I get that, I'll sell. If I don't, I'll just stay here.
Could a real estate investor bubble cause the home price drop to be deeper in price and longer in duration?
Well, you could argue that, but the fact of the matter is here, the rents are so high. So number one, if you're an investor, you're not buying houses now. You probably haven't been buying houses for a year. So you already have the products you need. But the rent, I'll give you an example. I had a house I sold for $6 million. A couple wanted to rent it. They offered my guy $25,000 a month. $25,000 a month for a $6 million house. That's insane. I see apartments I sell for $3 million. They're rented for $8,000 or $9,000 a month. So I think the rents are so high that these investors will just sit back and wait. That's one of the reasons we opened up the other offices, because houses are so, you know, they're half the price out there that they are here. So they're doing more sales there than we are doing in the high-end homes here. So I don't think that the investors, if they're being smart investors, they'll just wait.
Do real estate downturns cause all kinds of financial troubles?
Well, absolutely, because life, I mean, let's be honest, look at the government. I'm not a fan of the government. I watch the American news all the time. I can't stand what's going on. Their country's being destroyed. Our country's is being destroyed. The government, I can't think of anything the government's ever done in my lifetime that I thought was good. They're there to make it impossible for us. Like the market, it adjusts, it slowed down, and it's like the last time with 2017 and 18, the government stepped in and changed all the rules and everything. The market had been over since May of 16. It had already been over for over a year. They didn't have to do anything because the market was adjusting. But then they put all the new regulations in, the market totally collapsed. Here's what's going on here. Exactly. We had 4 or 5 years of a soft bubble market. Then it picked up for about 6 months, and all of a sudden the government, the interest rates and everything, and they step in, and now there's no foreign buyers, but it really, I haven't had a foreign buyer in 2 years. They haven't been coming here. And so now they step in, so it's already over with. The foreign buyers haven't been yet running in to buy here anymore. Houses are so expensive, there's better places to go and buy.
Alan, I can tell you, the only politician I respect because he immediately followed up on an election promise in 1981 Saskatchewan, when interest rates were going nuts, mortgages going nuts, farm loans going nuts. Alan Grant Devine, as he was being sworn in as premier, said, "Effect, I, Alan Grant Devine, pledge allegiance to the Queen, and effective at midnight, I will guarantee farm mortgages at this rate, home mortgages at this rate, business loans at this rate, and I am removing the gasoline tax, effective midnight tonight." Only politician to immediately follow up on election promises. People ask me, is that legal? I said, it's an order in council. At this very moment, he constitutes the entire Saskatchewan cabinet.
Isn't that the truth, though? So you can think of one guy.
One guy.
I mean, one guy. What? That's terrible. I mean, like I, as I said, I watch them. My wife has Fox News on from 7:30 in the morning until 10:30 at night. And we have no idea why you got one Democratic vote in there. But even the Republicans, all they do is talk, we're going to do this and that, but they never do any damn thing. You can't believe a word they say. It absolutely boggles the mind. The way I think of Biden, if I had to describe what I thought what Biden actually is, you'd lock me up in jail. I mean, I can't understand. In our premier, let's face it, he shouldn't be in there. There's no way on earth he should be in there. Can't trust a word the guy says. It's like everybody goes into politics, but can't get a real good job in the real world, so they end up there. And I see the decisions in my community of West Van. The council has changed so many rules, and I think, how did we let these guys get into office? It doesn't make any sense to me. They're just normal people, normal IQs, and they control everything. And they're not smart enough to do the right thing. So, but my philosophy of life is very simple. Every profession, athlete, doctor, lawyer, realtor, there's two or three that are really, really good. There's a few good ones, and there's all the rest. And what we deal with every day in life is all the rest. And they make all these big decisions, and it shocks me how they could be that stupid.
Well, Stuart Muir, a friend of the show, who's the head of the Resource Works Society, points out that every LNG tanker that leaves BC would be carrying $110 million worth of natural gas to Asia. Can you imagine how much, and if there's a tanker a day, how much money that would mean for the provincial economy, for hospitals, schools, parks, recreation, more doctors, more nurses, more paramedics? And I just heard his last statement. He does not seem keen on developing LNG.
No, it is. As I said, our system, my wife had an eye problem. She went to 5 doctors. None of them cared. None of them had an answer. And so, I mean, I had to get a new knee and had to do all these tests for my urine tests, a urologist, and all these I was referred to. I got 2 years went by before I got referrals. My knee had already been done for 8 months, and they called me in. July last year, oh, you were referred to be July 2020. Well, I'll work 10 or 12 hours a day or more to finish off whatever clients I have. These doctors, there's not enough doctors for sure, or they just don't care. But then finally she found an eye doctor last week that she met years ago. She walked in and said, oh, I can fix that problem. It isn't an issue at all. So, I mean, it drives you crazy. I mean, 2 years ago, I had a urologist that was supposed to do me in July 2020. He called me. I said, well, listen, you're 2 years late. I can tell you right now, I better be fine or you got a problem. I don't understand this. Nothing has improved. I think ever since we had the virus, the world's gone crazy. It's worse.
What has happened in the last half of 2022 to real estate on the North Shore and the west side of Vancouver?
Well, it's interesting because I've done this a couple of times. So if you think of last year, I remember there were two houses I was involved early in the year, and they were under $2 million in North Van. And under $2,198, you know, and they sold for $2,430 and $2,600. Now, that was what it was like early in the year. So last year turned out to be the second worst year in history. So I took the, but it was still 120 sales better than the worst year. So it was 321 and not 218, and this is like 443. So I took the last 6 months, and if you take the lower mainland, the last 6 months was worse. This last 6 months last year was worse than the last 6 months of the worst year. So yes, so it's not encouraging. The other areas, West Vancouver, North, I do all the very close. They were like, you know, within five or six sales. So really, the last 6 months was equivalent to the last 6 months of the worst year of all time. So that is not encouraging for this whole year. My second top guy in the office might call me that day and he wanted some advice. And I said, well, you had a great year. But he says, yeah, but I made it all by June. Made 83% of my earnings I had made by June. So yes, so basically the last 6 months was equal to the last 6 months, no matter what area you're in, Maple Ridge, Richmond, Vancouver East, it was equivalent to the last 6 months of the worst year in history. So as I said, so it's going to be a soft market. It does not mean you don't sell and buy, but you just have to be prepared.
How were annual sales in 2022 compared to other years?
Well, in my area, West Van, we had 443. The average year is 727, and the best year is over 1,200 sales. All areas were just about the same, but it is scary when you look at you having these sales. Like in Greater Van, we had 7,522, and the best year of all time was 22,740. So you think that we had 7,500 compared to 22,740. So that's so much the same. Last year we had 8.5, so it was down 1,000 sales, but way off the good years. In every area, the same. West Side, West Van at 321. The highest is 1,201. The average is 727. The North Van was 683, and you know what I mean, last year was twice that, 1600. So it's not good, but you see, it isn't all bad news, because I said, if you're selling, you're selling at a low market, but you're buying at a low market. So it balances off. The couple that I was with you yesterday, they're looking to buy their first homes, and they're from a wealthy family. They can afford an expensive house. And I said, guys, you don't have anything to sell. I will stay on top of everything, because that's what I do. I've been staffed from every area in the Lower Mainland, but they want to live in West Van. But I'll tell you when it's time to buy, because right now, if you find a great house and you're going to live there for 10 or 15 years, no problem, because you go up or down twice in that time. But if you don't want to overpay for a house, if you don't want to overpay for a house, you'll wait until I tell you it's time to buy. I mean, the biggest house I sold, I told the gentleman he overpaid by $8 million on it. And, because I told him the truth before he bought it, he was overpaying and that happened, because if you sell somebody a house that's too high, he's going to find out from the neighbor next door that you overpaid and you've lost the client. I mean, so you can imagine when I had to tell the gentleman, he said, you mean I overpaid by $8 million? I said, yes, you did, but I told you all along, all the offers, I told you how much the guy had paid for it 2 years ago. You paid him, 60% more than a couple of years ago, so they can't get mad. And he actually laughed, because he said, well, my wife and I had a bet. She said, Alan, he'll tell us a higher price. She said, no, I think he'll tell us the truth. And so I said, well, how do you know I told you the truth? She says, well, I just had the bank appraise it, and you were 500,000 out. It was 22.5 they appraised it at. You told me 22. So it's sometimes you have to tell stories, but the guy doesn't care about the money, and the house is more important. And a lot of people, it is. They just want a certain house. If you get a classic house, that's you can't find anywhere, then you can pay extra. It's like a piece of art. You'll pay so much for it, it may not be worth it, but you've got the piece of art. That's what it's like.
How is the current inventory of homes?
Well, that's the good stuff. That is the good stuff. It's shocking. It's extremely low. And normally when the market's been as bad as it is, it should be high. You take the greater Vancouver area, there's 2,800 to 2,900 houses. Okay, the average for the greater Vancouver in January is 4,300, and we're at 28. You take Vancouver West, they're at 270, and the average is 340. North Vancouver is 124, the average is 208. Vancouver West was, that was West Van at 270. Vancouver West, 476, and the average is 5.5. So every area, we are quite a bit down from what the normal is, the average. So that's a good thing, because it means if you're thinking of selling, don't wait too long, because there's a lot less product done. Because if the market keeps going on, there's going to be more houses that don't sell. So I would tell people right now, if you're going to sell this year, the product is a lot lower than it should be. So that's a good time. Like, there's something that happens every year. It amazes me. It gets to be November, and everybody decides to take their house off the market. Well, we'll wait till spring. The real estate, springtime, it'll be great. You hear that so much. Take the house off. Well, I love November, and I was only here for 60 days in December, but I sold two houses. And the fact of the matter is, November, you've lost a third of the product is off the market. The buyers are real buyers. They're not looking in November, December unless they have to buy. I remember I had a house on the oceanfront, and I decided to sell it. I took it off. Then a year went by. I left it on in December. On December the 19th, I got a call from a guy in New York who flew out and bought my home. So, because there wasn't very many waterfronts on the market at that time. So you need to have a realtor that, because so many realtors, the market's slow at this time. Yes, it is slow, but they're real buyers. You've got a better chance with fewer buyers, because springtime, everybody comes out, they've been locked up, they go, let's go look at houses. So half of them aren't buyers, but it falls the end of the year, these guys are buying out. They don't buy yours, they're buying the one down the street. So keep your house on the market in November. Don't believe what your realtor says, because they say, you've got to realize, at West Van, we had 443 houses sold here. Okay? Now, there's two ends. There's a list and sell. So 900 sales. But there's 642 realtors in West Van. Now, of what sold, all the houses sold, we only sell 53% of our own houses. So that means almost 50% are sold by realists from Overtown, North Vancouver. So really, even though we sold 440, we really only sold like half of that. And then you got the apartment sales. So when you analyze that, and the top guys, when I used to do 125 sales a year, you know, we didn't have as many, even the Chinese, the Persian went around and all that. But now the top guys sell 60, but so most realtors make little money. They just put their house, they go with a company, so when they sell, they don't have to pay a commission on it. So most realtors, sure, there's a few that make a lot of money. But it's like any business. The best doctor in the world makes a lot of money and so forth. But most realtors don't. That's why it's tough, because when you only sell 2, 3, 4 houses a year, what do you really know about your job? I've hired so many people lately, and I show them my graphs and charts that I do. Every one of them was in shock. Well, I'm not even qualified to be a realtor. I had no idea this was what was actually happening. They don't know, because they're not taught properly. And I didn't teach my staff for years, because I had to compete with some of my people to be the top guy. And then now I'm at the point where my firm and company is much more important. I want to expand it. And I only have, I only sell 15, 20 houses a year. I used to have 40 to 50 houses on the market all the time. I've got all the time in the world to help. The guy that I just sold in December, I've never worked harder for a client in my life. Every single day. But I got him. He didn't lose the value of the drop in the market. He was very happy.
Are we likely to see more supply hit the market this year?
Yes, we. I mean, as spring comes, see, most times, even though I could have been the top reeler in Canada, I still have to wait till about December 20th or something to get a deal. I have not had a deal this year. My partner Malcolm Hasden has not had a deal because most people, it takes time to get back from holidays or Christmas. It takes time. So there's going to be more by springtime. Our inventory will be probably on another third. So there'll be a lot more houses on the market because, as I said, they always put them on. They wait. A lot of these people have waited until too often to ever, let's put them on in the end of February or March. But you've already lost a lot of money in that time. Your realtor gave you bad advice.
Are sellers still wanting their asking price even though prices are declining?
Well, yes. And the problem you have with that is that, like, guys like me and my partner and a few others, they expect us to get them more. That's why they hire us. So we have to try. We put them on. We can tell them what it's worth. Well, it's what we always do. But they said, well, I need this, and I don't care if I sell. I've heard that, don't care if I sell 8 million times. They just, well, I don't need to sell. Here's what I want to try. So you try it out, because sometimes you'll be surprised. Sometimes I probably sell as many houses for more than I expect than I do for less, because I try and be conservative. I said, okay, here's what I believe. But here's what we should try. I mean, there are good realtors who put their house on purposely at a higher price just to get the house, and they drop it three or four times. Well, the market's going to is changing so rapidly, you can't afford to drop it every 2 or 3 months. So you really can't do that. So you should price it close to what it's worth and hope your realtor can close the deal. Because I can't sell a house to somebody who doesn't like the house. I mean, I'm not a smooth talker. I've stuttered all my life. But I do the stats. I'm better prepared than any realtor in the lower mainland by a mile. But I can't make them like the house. But my job is to close the price. I have to find a reason for them to pay that price. That's what my job is.
In today's market, how important is it for sellers to price their homes right?
Most important, because what happens is the worst thing you can do in the business, start high, drop it, drop. But every time you drop it, the market's dropped, it's still too high. So all of a sudden you're on for 2 years. The high-end houses sometimes sit there for a year or two. And it's just because, and see, the problem with our business is that most of the homeowners think they know as much, but not so much the men, because the men are at work. But if the wife is, her job is to raise, look after the house and raise the kids, which is a job I wouldn't want. I'd rather be just selling houses. But they think they know more. Like, I can't tell you, I think we should have the, you know, that somebody come in and spruce up the house and stage it. Oh, no, I can do that. I'm good at doing that. Well, they do it, and you hate it. You know, she thinks she has skill, but she don't. I can't tell you how many husbands say to me, Alan, you're my agent. Do what you need to do. Just try and get along with my wife to make her happy again. But I don't want to hear about it because I know what she's like. She's, well, look, I can do this. I can do that. I mean, they think they can sell the house themselves or something. And it's like any other job. This is getting the best, the biggest investment you've got in your life, and you give it to your neighbor's son because you just started. I mean, we all have to learn. I had to learn. I went through nothing. But, I mean, this today, I've never seen a more important time than this, the realtor you have. And the trouble is, you don't know which realtor, just because he's at the top. I can give you names of a couple of top realtors. I wouldn't list my home with them no matter what. And because even though they're good salesmen, they don't know what the market's doing. They have no idea. My partner's great. He just calls me because he knows I spend 25 hours a week. And he's the best guy at the Instagram and social media I've ever seen. We've been a partnership since 96. We've never had an argument. And we're expanding the company and we're two different people. Our interests are not alike at all.
Are there times of the year that are better for buying and better for selling?
Well, the springtime is always the best because kids are in school, so they're going to be moving in June. So the springtime, that's where everybody puts a house on, the springtime, and hope to get it sold by the end of June to do that. So the springtime is the best, but the trouble with the springtime, the prices are always too high. Think, okay, the market's good, it's coming to the real estate. Okay, it's been slow, but spring the market will pick up. Well, that's not how it is anymore. Our market's been bad for 6-7 months, depending on the area you're in, and it's not about to. And when I look today at the sales in North Vancouver, West Vancouver, West Side, the top area had seven sales. Seven sales. That was the top one. And the average is 40 or 50. But don't forget, every deal is subject for 2 weeks. So really, you can take off 2 weeks of January because that they're subject. So they're going to start to pour in. But are they going to get to, we had 42 last January, or are they going to get to 42? Not a hope in hell. But you need a realtor who knows this stuff so he can tell you, so you can make the proper decision. It's no good just saying, well, listen, I think you should drop the price. You've got to show them why you have to drop the price. This is why you have to do. Well, the board said there was 31 sales this month. There was only 17. This is what the other realtor, there's not a realtor other than the few I've taught know that. They just look at the board and say, we use the board staff. And it's a good indication. But this is too valuable an asset. That's why, I mean, we drove out, my partner and I drove out to Port Moody. I don't think I've ever sold a house there. We're just putting a waterfront out there because they're realizing how important this actually is, and they get more money for the house. You got to have somebody. Most realtors say, well, I can't, so I'll just put it on the market, and one of the top realtors will come and sell the place. Well, that doesn't work that way, because your realtor sits back and doesn't say a damn thing, and they don't have all the stats on the market.
Do people who must sell their home set new valuations in a declining market?
Well, yes, we do, but we prepare them ahead of time. I mean, I do. Most realtors just go in and want that. You think of it. You call in three, four, five realtors. You take the one with the highest price. Okay? And then it comes on, it's too high, then you start to adjust and start to adjust. But I go in there and I said, am I in competition? I need to know that because then who is it? I know the top realtors. There's one or two that I know they're going to go in too high. So I'm going to lose the house because there's 500,000 higher than me. I'm going to be right. And I'll guarantee you by the time the house sells, it's right where I say it sells. That's big. But the other guy got the house because he said, let's do this. No, sometimes a miracle can happen. And you get somebody who loves your house, but you've got to have a very special property. Houses are houses and they're nice, but there's certain ones that I said, like a piece of art. If you have one of those, you can get the magic price, but very few people own those type of houses.
People that have been selling, did they buy another home?
Yes, because you cannot, the rents are too high, as I said, when you're paying $25,000 for a $6 million house, which is way too high, but even $8,000, $10,000, $11,000 a month, you can't afford to lose that. You think, it's just not worth it. So they will buy, but they've sold at the lower market. They're buying at the lower market. So really, they're just trading across the board. And so, you have to pay it. You have to pay a commission on the house and the tax. But if you have a good realtor, like what I do, I said, okay, these people, the market's soft. They're going to sell their place for that much there. I've got to get them a little more. I had an apartment in a high rise, a very expensive high rise. So they go up to $18 million, and I know that they had a smaller apartment. They had bought it for just under five, and so then they wanted to buy something else. So I said, okay, they paid the GST, all the tax. So I said, all right. So this is where I have to sell the place, and it was tough because the floor down below had just sold for $800,000 less than they had bought it for. They both bought the same price. I said, yes, my people didn't lose. They lost $300,000. They didn't lose $800,000. But I was pleased. That's all they lost. And I tell them that ahead of time. This is what it was. But telling the truth, nobody really wants to hear the truth. They want to think their house is special, is going to sell for higher. And so it's so hard on us. I mean, the amount of houses I don't get because I tell the truth, and the other realtors are very good. They're probably selling more houses than I am right now. Okay, they're a lot younger and doing more. But they just want the house. Their goal is to, and mine was the same. When I was number one, I just wanted to sell houses. Now I'm at the other end of my career where I want the people to be happy. It gives me such joy to sell somebody a house and they're there. And I can drive by and, I've sold houses 50 years and some of them are still there. And I absolutely adore that.
How are West Vancouver waterfront properties selling?
They're telling, last year we had 8, the average per year is 18. So, you know, that's the average. So it's half of the average, and last year was 8. I'll be shocked if we have 8 this year.
How are the high-end West Vancouver homes selling?
Well, it's interesting. Half of 21. Mm-hmm. Half of 21. And it's not just all, I look through all the greater van, and I look at how many houses sold out. Like, if you look at houses over 10, I mean, last year they had, or in 21 they had 49, over 10 million. 22 they had 31. And the same in our area. We had 44, or no, sorry, 15 over 10, 8 this year. So they're half of the year before. They're always harder to sell, but most of them in that right now, we did have an open on a bank foreclosure over town two nights ago, a $20 million house. You hate seeing stories like that, because obviously something, if you could afford that house to build it, you had the money to do it. Now all of a sudden, your business has changed or something's happened. So I hate seeing that, but the high-end houses, basically you can say the other half. If you look at in Greater Van, the highest for 7 million and over is 139. That happened in 2016. They sold 139 over 7 million, 49 over 10. And now you look in 2019, we only had 6 houses over 10. So you need to be aware of these stats too, because you can look at, say, okay, how many houses do we have on the market? And, how many of these are going to, so I can go in there and say, okay, there's 68 houses in this range, and we're going to sell probably 7 this year. That's all that will sell. So we have to do accordingly to get your one of the 7. A realtor has to be prepared with those stats, because everybody wants more than their house is worth. But if you can show them on paper, this is what the numbers actually are, they realize that, well, they're not going to get as much as they expected to get, which makes it much easier to sell the house.
What's happening in the pre-sale market?
Well, it's interesting, because I've never been involved in that, I'll be honest with you, but I just opened an office at White Rock, and they just did 200 pre-sales for us. So first of all, that's over on the island. I hired this couple today that they're going to the pre-sale. So really, the thing that's happened is the pre-sale market has always been, you buy a house 3 years before it's built, or sometimes, you know, 4 years before it's finished off. You expect, and over in West Vancouver, you probably expect to make $1 million. Now, all of a sudden, that has changed. There was a pre-sale my wife wanted to buy in 2017, this building. She loved the building. And I said, no, I'm not going to do this, because these prices are way too high, and we're not going to do it. So she said, well, you know, she wasn't happy. So sure enough, it came on. They all sold in 21 and 20, you know. Now they're reselling, and they're losing. If you paid $5 million, you're losing $800 million. I appraised one at $9 million. He bought it for 12.9. So they were terrible pre-sales. So I was absolutely right that there. But you know, it depends. But these are getting too expensive. When you're doing pre-sales for $15 million or something, the buyers can change. They could be gone. Like, there's no foreign buyers now. You know, there's none of that, so that's gone. So it's going to be harder. But in some areas, that's starting to move. That's why we expand the office, because there's a lot more sales. The guys that we hired, they're doing a lot of sales in Abbotsford and Clone and that. Their market, I mean, they're doing 65, 70 sales. Well, here, the top guy does that, not just the realtors in the area. So it makes us, we don't make as much at each house, our fees. But it doesn't matter. If you're doing that many, it pays off. So it's the same old story. Your realtor is like the best doctor or lawyer you could possibly get. He or she knows the market. Now, you see, I teach a lot of my people this now, because I didn't. But now I'm trying to expand my company and grow and do more, make more money in the company. I spend time with my guys and say, here's what's going on. Here's the truth. Don't believe anybody else. This is the action. And here's how I get. I show them how to do it, and they're in shock. No matter how long they've been a realtor, they have no idea these were the true facts.
Martin Armstrong of Armstrong Economics was recently on This Week in Money saying the real rate of inflation is more likely 32% than the 8% the government claims when you focus on food, energy, transportation, other factors instead of just paper clips and trinkets. When the cost of everyday living increases substantially, does this have a financial and psychological impact on home buying?
It absolutely does, because you think of it. We know the houses. As I said, I know the housing market. But when I see my king crab going up to the price per pound, it is doubled or tripled, or so that's my favorite meal, or my steak. I have a dog that can't eat anything except a filet every night. And I mean, it's shocking how much when you put in all those things. I don't know whether it's 30%, but as you said, at 8%, you're not even close to that. I would have guessed 17 or 18%, but mine's only a guess. But no, it is shocking. For the first time in my life, I've gone through my last few years spending and said, okay, I have to watch how much do I spend on everything. And it is. You can't believe how the prices have gone up. And whose fault is that? I blame the government for everything that happens. And as I said, there are a bunch of average individuals who get a job, they run for politics, they get a job and change all the rules. All the rules in my business have changed. The council got in there and changed all the things. Is there anything they have done that I think have helped us? Not in the least. The rules that they're doing, they think that there's like 14 guys, and the two guys are realtors, the rest are just, well, put me on a board of lawyers or doctors and let's see how much that I know and I'll change all the rules. Makes no sense. I cannot handle this stuff when these government guys, they get the power and they think they know more than the guys who run the industry.
If people are planning on selling, should they be listing now?
Well, yes, as I said, the product, I mean, if you don't have to sell for a few years, you don't care. So if you don't have to sell, then yes, you can try that because your house is nice and somebody hits, they need it. The wife says, this is my house. They'll pay more for it. Even now they will. But if you're thinking of selling in the next year, year and a half, I would tell you, you do it now because the inventory, I mean, as I said, our inventory is 270 houses in West Fab. When the inventory really gets bad, it's over 600. So think of that. That's over twice as much. The inventory in a matter of months could be 500 or 600 if the market is as bad as it could get. Then it's going to be so much harder to sell. There's so much product. Right now, it's a good time to list and you see what the hell happens. But the price has to be fair. But as I said, you decide to take the offer by what you have to spend to buy another house. If you find it, you guys don't sell before, don't buy before you sell. And then when you find the house you think you like, okay, what can I get for mine? Is it a worthwhile move? But you know, most times it's your heart that gets involved. The wife or the kids, oh, Dad, I love this house. I got to have it, blah, blah, blah. So sometimes emotional rule, but that depends on your financial situation. We've all bought houses or places. The house I'm in right now is my man cave. I use it as my man cave. I hate the apartment. It's my man cave. It needs a lot of work on it, but I'm happy as hell here and I could do anything I want. The apartment we have, it's a, you know, showcase, and I'm happy working at home in my pajamas. And that's what I do. I love it here. I got the view, the privacy, the pool. I can hit golf balls out my backyard. I'm happy as anything.
Alan, how can people get a hold of you?
Remember, Angel Hasman, A-N-G-E-L-L, Hasman, H-E-S-M-A-N, .ca. But my phone number is 778-888-7474.
My guest has been Alan Markangel, one of Canada's top realtors. He has sold more than 4,000 properties. And that wraps up our show for this week. We'd like to thank our guests, Ross Clark, John Rubino, and Alan Markangel. And thank you for listening. If you have any questions for the show or our guests, you can send them to info@housestreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. We'll be back next week with more This Week in Money.
Comments made on This Week in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. This Week in Money is a production of How Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer is Tom Allen.